Hi, this is Matt Sansbury, Executive Editor at SearchDataCenter.com. Today we have Pitt Turner, Executive Director of the Uptime Institute, and we're going to be talking a little bit about easy, inexpensive ways to improve your data center's PUE, Power Usage Effectiveness. So thanks for joining us, Pitt.
You're welcome.
So talk to me a little bit about what we're going to go over today. What are your main points that you like to stress for people that want to reduce their PUE?
Well, the first one, Matt, is without dodging your question, the first one is to understand what PUE is. And PUE is a measure of the effectiveness of the mechanical and electrical system that supports IT. It is not a measure of IT efficiency. So as we look at PUE of, say, 1.8, just to pick a number, the 0.8 represents the energy used for mechanical and electrical, and the 1 to the left of the decimal represents IT. So as you look at that and you project into these lower and lower PUEs of 1.6, 1.5, 1.2 in the case of Google, understand that those are measures of facility overhead, and IT still has some efficiency opportunities, and we'll look for those in a different format. But so PUE is really a good measure of over time how much energy is being used at one site to provide power and cooling.
Great. That's a really good explanation. What's a good PUE to shoot for, like, if you're just an average standard data center company, not a Google?
For years and years, we would have said 2.0 is a good metric. That's kind of legacy right now. We see people designing Tier 3 and Tier 4 data centers that are establishing design objectives in the 1.4 to 1.5 range. And, might stretch the design team's skill sets, but they're able to achieve those. The owners are able to achieve those. And that has a lot to do for new sites with picking efficient equipment and matching loads to capacities and designing things with variable frequency pumps and fans and high-efficiency equipment, maybe oversized cooling towers to improve the approach. And there are a lot of technical things that go into it, low levels of lighting as a clear example, although it's not very significant.
Excellent. So let's start with some of the inexpensive ways to really make a dent. What's the first thing that comes to mind for you?
The first thing is to understand that many data centers are operating roughly twice as many fan coil units as they need to provide the amount of cooling that they require. And the reason they're doing that is that the airflow is not being managed properly. So the very first thing I would do with no capital investment is to go to our website, pull down Dr. Bob's 24 by Forever cooling article that lists the 27 steps to manage airflow, and start to do things to properly manage the airflow. This includes installing blanking plates in open spots in a rack. It includes closing off cable holes through the underfloor. It includes closing off any opening in the underfloor where the cooling air can escape. And lastly, it involves moving the openings in your raised floor into the cold aisle and really managing, making sure that the cooling air gets where you want it to get and no place else.
Great. That's a good point. And what's the cost there? There's a cost to all everything, but it's a low cost. What is the cost in that?
Well, the cost is mostly labor. There was one site, a well-managed data center of about 40,000 square feet, and they decided to ask themselves, we're a good site, we're well-run, what can we do better? And they were able to save in excess of $100,000 a year by using some staff time and simple products to close off their cable openings. And as I said, it was a well-run site, but even they had opportunity to improve.
Great. And so let's move on. What's the next big area you see as an opportunity?
Okay, once airflow management is well established, I think moving the temperature range up is the next step. Often we see people using 55-degree supply air, and yet ASHRAE and the Institute and the industry all agree that temperatures up to 80.6 degrees inlet to the IT device are acceptable for maximum reliability. And so why do we make 55-degree air to meet an 80-degree temperature requirement? And that's something that needs to get changed. So So if we slowly change that 55-degree air after we solve all the air distribution issues, we can raise the temperature range and save tremendous amounts of energy.
Now, do you see people really applying that today? What is the level of adoption of that, those higher ranges?
It really does vary by site, but we do see a lot of sites being designed to use 78 or 80-degree supply air, and they understand that careful management of the air distribution is required. We have seen sites that have retrofit, just changed the temperature range they operate at, and very successfully implemented higher temperatures.
Great. So there isn't a significant pushback from the IT side on raising temperatures?
Well, again, the temperature that really matters is the inlet to the IT device. So if you're making 55-degree air and mixing it with return air and supplying your IT devices with 75-degree air, 75 is the number IT sees. So if you're able to properly manage your cooling air and then make 75-degree air, there's no real difference.
Great. What about the kind of the people concern of raising that inlet air temperature? Because one of the things that I've heard people shoot down on this topic is, that hot aisle gets really hot and it's kind of a employee issue.
Yeah, the hot aisle will get hot. If you raise the supply air temperatures to, say, 75, you will see temperatures in the range of 90 or 95 coming off the back of the IT devices. And, that's hot. It's also very dry, so it's not like a hot, humid summer day. It's a dry heat, as they say. And yes, that is a concern by many, but by the same token, people will not complain about walking through 100-degree temperatures to get to their car when it's time to go home.
Right.
So I think it can be managed, and part of it is education to ensure that people do know that it's supposed to be hot in the hot aisle and cold in the cold aisle.
Yes. Very good point. Well, let's move on to what you consider the next, free money in the data centers.
Free money in the data centers. By involving development of a staff plan to rotate equipment capacity, most data centers are operating too much equipment. If they have four UPS modules, for example, and they need one plus one redundant, that's two units, they still operate all four. So by developing a careful plan of how to stage UPS modules on and off so that the batteries maintain their proper charge, or how to turn off cooling units or turn off chillers that perhaps are running with a shared load, by shutting off capacity components down to the point where you still have enough to meet the load and you still have enough to meet the redundancy requirements, there are opportunities to shut those equipment elements off. It's important here that the business requirements for availability or redundancy always be considered before going out and just arbitrarily starting to turn off units.
Right. That sounds excellent. When you go about doing this, is there a kind of a strategy? Are you auditing your equipment? What's the first step if you're going through and doing this type of a project where you're turning things off and cycling?
I think the first step is one of the first steps is to begin to use KW to measure all capacities. We find a world today where we use KW for some equipment, amps for some equipment, KVA for some equipment, BTUs for some, and tons for others, and they can all be measured in KW. So that allows, it makes it much easier for a site manager to say, well, I have 600 KW of UPS output, and I have 3,000 kW of cooling capacity. Wow, those numbers don't match very well. What should I do about it? And that begins to make it, to take some of the mystery out. Ideally, if you had 600 kW of UPS output, all of that energy turns into heat, so you'd have a little bit more than 600 kW of cooling, maybe 700, maybe 800, but not 3,000, for example. And so consistent metrics or measurements will help take the mystery out. And then it gets to the point of just going around matching up how much load you have versus how much capacity you have. And once you're using kW for all of that, it makes it pretty straightforward to do a size comparison.
Great. All right. Well, that's a good list of things people can do for on the cheap. What do you think holds people back from doing this stuff, Pitt?
I think the biggest constraint to implementing many of these ideas is resistance to change or intolerance for risk. For many, many years, you know, human nature is to resist change, especially if it's not your idea. And the other one is that we have seen instances where people have gone into data centers and without creating a good, solid, strategic, or even a methodical, tactical plan, they begin to make changes, and all of a sudden they get more hotspots and more equipment goes into alarm and they get concerned, and so they put everything back the way it was and vow to never touch it again. That certainly is a predictable outcome, but we would encourage people to really come up with a plan to understand the sequence in which you do things, to do them with least amount of risk, and then do it slowly. It is a worthwhile endeavor. It doesn't have to be done quickly. It doesn't have to be done without thinking. It shouldn't be done without thinking it out. And once you do that, then we have seen many, many, many sites go through this progression, make the changes, reduce their energy consumption, create a more stable, more predictable cooling environment, and save energy at the same time.
Great. Thanks, Ben. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for the opportunity, Matt.